Your Honors, may I reserve 1 minute for rebuttal, please? My name is George Wazinski. I'm the attorney for Petitioner United Food and Commercial Workers Union Local 540. The background of this case is this, that in late December 1999, a group of employees working in a meat market of Walmart's Jacksonville, Texas Supercenter, a department store, filed a petition for an election, an NLRB election. That election occurred in February of 2000. The employees won. Later, in early August of that year, 2000, the National Labor Relations Board overruled Walmart's objections and certified Local 540 as the collective bargaining representative of those meat market employees. Later in August, the general counsel for the National Labor Relations Board filed a motion for summary judgment, arguing that when Walmart refused to bargain with the certified collective bargaining representative of those employees, Local 540, that it did so unlawfully. In response to that motion for summary judgment in late September of 2000, Walmart for the first time raised a defense in the Jacksonville case that it did not have to bargain with these employees, it did not have to bargain with Local 540 because it had converted from in-store meat cutting to what's called case-ready meat. What case-ready meat means is that instead of cutting meat inside the store, Walmart was having Iowa Beef Processors, or IBP in Iowa, cut the meat at a plant there, prepackage it, and send it down to the stores, the Walmart stores, and so the meat was already ready for the meat market bins or cases. The only change that Walmart's implementation of case-ready meat made to either the meat market employees' jobs or to Walmart's operations was that there was not going to be any in-store meat cutting anymore. Everything else remained the same. The terms and conditions of these workers' jobs remained the same. They continue to receive higher wages compared to the rest of the store's employees. They continue to be scheduled for regular schedules. Walmart typically, for the rest of the store, would change the schedules for employees left and right. They continue to receive 40 hours a week, full-time hours. And for that reason, they were eligible for all of Walmart's benefits. 40% of the rest of the store's employees were part-timers who were not eligible for Walmart's benefits. These workers continue to work with meat, with this product line of Walmart's, in the meat market, the same meat market, under the same supervision, even after Walmart implemented case-ready meat. And finally, Walmart's implementation of case-ready meat did not change Walmart's business. Walmart continued to be in the business, the retail business of selling beef, pork, and poultry. This is not like a situation where, for legitimate business reasons, an employer goes out of business or closes a facility or even closes a product line in a facility or lays off a substantial number or terminates or transfers out of the bargaining unit a substantial number of employees. 6 years later, in the fall of 2006, the National Labor Relations Board held that this one change, this change to case-ready meat that really changed nothing in either Walmart's operations or what these employees did, that was sufficient to relieve Walmart of its obligation to bargain under the National Labor Relations Act. The board has never, to my knowledge, and I believe...
Well, to relieve it of its bargain to negotiate over whether to switch to case-ready meat, right? It required the company to bargain over the effects of the change, didn't it?
That's correct, over the effects. I am arguing the issue of whether Walmart has a continuing obligation to bargain over the terms and conditions of those employees' employment. So whether it, in effect, bargain a contract with Local 540 even after Walmart converted to case-ready meat. You're correct. The board did order Walmart to bargain over the effects of its conversion to case-ready meat.
So you're taking issue with the board's conclusion that the unit was no longer appropriate. Is that?
That's correct. That's correct. And the reason, there's several reasons that I take issue with the board's conclusion. First is the board has never, to my knowledge, and I don't believe the board has cited any case of the contrary in its brief, has never held that an employer is relieved of its obligation to bargain when the employer, when the same employees continue to do the same type of work in the same facility, the same area, the same geographic area, and no one is laid off, no one is transferred out of the unit, and the company does neither closes the facility nor discontinues the line of business. And that's the case here. The union, to be clear, Had Walmart made a legitimate business decision that it was going to discontinue selling meat in the grocery side of its department stores, its supercenters?
Hold on. You say a legitimate business decision. The general counsel didn't challenge the legitimacy of the decision, right? So that's not really before us, is it?
That's correct. I was actually going to make a concession in general, Your Honor, that an employer who lawfully decides to discontinue a business line or lawfully decides to close a facility.
But this employer lawfully made this switch to case-ready meat.
The board did not allege that the employer did this unlawfully.
Right.
That's
so
correct.
For our purposes, this was a lawful switch.
I concede that, Your Honor. And my point is that had Walmart gone out of business, stopped selling meat, we wouldn't be here today. The board's decision finding that the unit became inappropriate when case-ready meat was implemented is unreasonable in our view for several different reasons. First, the board has never held, to my knowledge, has never held that a meat department unit cannot be an appropriate unit in the absence of skilled meat cutting. In fact, there's a case that's cited in the brief, Kosher Plaza Supermarkets, where the board there in that case recognized that it was possible that a meat department unit could be appropriate for collective bargaining even in the absence of skilled meat cutting.
Don't we have to give the board a fair measure of discretion in making that kind of determination, however?
Oh, that's correct, Your Honor. I would submit that if the board's decision here were reasonable, which our argument is that it is not, if the board's decision is reasonable, then yes, this court actually should defer to the board's discretion.
Well, in determining what's reasonable, we have to, you know, that's pretty wide boundaries, too.
That's correct, Your Honor. But when the board revokes the federal rights of employees to collective bargaining, federal rights that have been around since the Depression, the New Deal, and it does so based on a change that an employer made that was completely with the employer's control, that the employer did not bargain over, and that doesn't change anything in either the employer's operations or what the employees do,
well,
I would submit to you that that's unreasonable.
It did make a dramatic change. It no longer needed skilled workers.
Well,
and the board has several times said that that's a critical factor in departments.
It made
no change, but the fact is that after this change, there was no need for skilled meat cutters any longer, correct?
Yes, I would concede that, Your Honor. Nevertheless, after the decision was made.
So the board looked at that and said, that's enough to make the unit no longer appropriate. And how do we say that's unreasonable?
I'll tell you why.
Yeah, go ahead.
First off, what happened here was that Walmart said we no longer need skilled meat cutters or skilled meat wrappers. Fair enough. But Walmart nevertheless committed and stuck to its commitment that all the workers in this meat department would continue to work in this meat department, right? Would continue to work in the meat market. The skilled workers stayed. This is not a situation where Walmart said, like it did at the earlier hearing in Palestine, Texas, in another bargaining unit case, where Walmart went into before the board, the regional office of the board, and argued that that board dismissed another election petition for another election among a meat market in Palestine, Texas. There, Walmart argued that, look, we're going to implement case-ready meat, and by God, what's going to happen after that is 60% of the skilled workers in this unit are going to be transferred out. They're going to be putting together bicycles in the sporting goods department. They're going to be putting plants out in the garden department. They're not going to be working. We're not going to have skilled people in this meat department. If Walmart had stuck by that and transferred out all the skilled workers and basically disassembled the department, again, I would submit that that might be a different case. But what Walmart did here is after that Palestine unit determination hearing, after that hearing, we put out a press release saying that meat department workers were contacting UFCW to organize. In response to that, Walmart guaranteed its workers that even after the implementation of case-ready meat, those workers would continue to work in the meat department at the same higher wage rates, the same hours, the same everything, and the judge found in this case that Walmart lived up to its commitment. I see that I'm into my rebuttal time.
Right. Okay.
Thank you.
We'll hear from Walmart.
May it please the court, Steve Willis on behalf of Walmart. And with the court's permission, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Your Honors, The issue I'm here to discuss is the one that Judge Tatel alluded to earlier, and that is the effects bargaining question. The board overstepped two bright lines in finding that Walmart had a duty to bargain over effects with the UFCW as a result of the case-ready meat transition. The first bright line is the line that this court articulated in NLRB versus Blake Construction, 1981 case. In that case, this court said, the board may not make findings or order remedies on violations that are not charged in the general counsel's complaint. And that's exactly what's happened here. The board predicates its effects bargaining obligation on a duty to bargain that, according to the board, arose on March 13th, 2000, months before July 15th when the unit became inappropriate. There is nothing in the complaint that alleges any bargaining acts or act violations, and when I say act violations, I mean the National Labor Relations Act, prior to July 15th. And we know that the board is relying on conduct that occurred before July 15th in March of 2000 to bootstrap its argument that there was a continuing duty that arose in March of 2000 and there was a continuing violation. And we know that from footnote 17 of the board's brief at page 46, which I'll refer to as the chutzpah footnote. There the board argues, just as in the hypothetical case of the young man orphaned by his own hand, Walmart is attempting to use the very, and here's the key words, wrongful conduct at issue, its implementation of its conversion of the meat department without bargaining over effects, to defeat what the law routinely requires when an employer changes terms and conditions of employment.
Is your point that the general counsel didn't mention in his complaint the March 13th request to bargain?
Did not allege it, and also did not allege any violation.
If he had, then there wouldn't be an issue here, right?
There wouldn't be the first issue, Your Honor.
Right. But they did allege that the union did request bargaining in August.
Yes, Your Honor. After
wasn't that a continuing request? I mean, isn't that enough? In fact, the letter, the end of the letter says, if I don't receive a response from you, I'll assume Walmart's position is the same as it was earlier this year on similar bargaining and information requests.
Your Honor, are you referring to the August request?
So why isn't that enough? That's what the general counsel alleged, that he focused on this letter. This was a continuing request to bargain, and on March 13th, the employer had an obligation to bargain over the effects of its change.
The August letter would create a continuing bargain, a duty to bargain thereafter, after August, but it can't relate back to...
But by its own terms, it does.
Well, the letter is not the allegation, Your Honor. Under the due process rules set forth in this court's Blake decision, the Walmart has to be on notice that its acts in March of 2000, as alleged in the complaint, were wrongful. There is no allegation of any wrongful conduct prior to July 15th, 2000. And as a due process matter, that's a bright line. If the general counsel had wanted to connect those dots, he had to allege an act violation and bargaining acts prior to July 15th. He didn't do it, and that's the end of story as far as the due process issue is concerned. I'd like to also point out that even if there had been an allegation of wrongful conduct prior to July 15th, which there is not, if there had been, the general counsel's case still is without merit, or the decision is without merit, because it violates what is referred to in our briefs and in the board's decisions as the Mike O'Connor rule. The board argues at page 41 of its briefs that a combination of two factors gave rise to a duty to bargain in March of 2000. One, the union had won an election. Two, there was a demand for bargaining. That's an incorrect statement of the law. There's a third criteria that is required, and that third criteria is certification by the board. The board has to certify the union. That certification here did not take place until August 9th of 2000, when the board resolved the elections to objection.
Doesn't the certification relate back to the time of the election?
In general, yes, Your Honor. But here it did not relate back because an intervening event vacated the certification, the validity of the certification. And that was the board's 2006 decision that related back to July 15th, 2000, before certification, where the board said, not appropriate. Unit is not appropriate for representational purposes. And we know from the board's Frito-Lay decision, which I don't believe the government even cites in its brief, that where in a representational process, the regional director or the board has certified a unit, and it's later determined that the unit certified was inappropriate, that the certification will be vacated. And that is at page 821 of the Frito-Lay decision. Finally, Your Honors, I'd like to say that the plant closing cases that the board cites to and relies on are inapposite here because they have a different starting point. The plant closing cases start with an established bargaining relationship with an appropriate unit that's represented by a certified union. Here, none of those factors existed, and as a result, the plant closing cases do not apply. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Hear from the board.
May it please the court, Phil Hostek for the National Labor Relations Board. I think as a starting point, it is helpful to emphasize what is not actually at issue in this case. There is no dispute that at the beginning of 2000, the union prevailed 7-3 in an election to represent a small unit of meat cutters, which was carved out of a much larger employment setting. There is no dispute that that was an appropriate unit. Walmart challenged the unit determination. It did not succeed and has not pressed any further challenge to the original unit determination. It is also undisputed that the central set of factors, cluster of factors that convinced the acting regional director that this was an appropriate unit confined to these 10 employees were factors relating to the exercise of skilled meat cutting. And historically, the board is centered on skilled meat cutting in this particular industrial context. From that, I think it's appropriate to talk a little bit about the union's challenge. Their leitmotif is that.
Before you do that, could you just respond to Mr. Wheelis's point about his argument is that prior to July 15th, the general counsel's complaint contains no charges of any kind.
That's correct, but that is neither in a NLRB complaint nor in a complaint in district court is it necessary to plead every fact on which you're going to ultimately rely.
Right, but is there an allegation? I thought his point was is that there's no allegation in the complaint of any unlawful, of any. They don't mention the March 13th letter.
No, the complaint doesn't. The complaint alleges that as of August of 00, Walmart
right, which was
refused.
After July 15th.
That is correct.
So what's the answer to that? Why is that not fatal?
Well, the answer to that is that, first of all, that Walmart's challenge is essentially a due process challenge, that it was on no kind of notice that any other predicate facts would have established its liability post July 15th, and that's simply belied by the record. This was clearly litigated. The evidence was a series of letters that are undisputed, that are joint exhibits. There was no objection to the introduction of those letters establishing the predicate. There are precious few allegations of relating even to the election, but that is,
you mean,
as well
that
an essential.
Issue, is your point that this issue wasn't raised before the board?
No, that's actually not my point. The principal point is that requiring on pain of waiver a sort of a bill of particulars is just not consistent with the law.
Well, I don't think he's saying it's a bill of particulars. I think his point is that there was no allegation that there was a request for bargaining prior to July 15th.
That's correct, but again, you know, generally, all that is required is a short and plain statement of the case. There was no question that there was a series, half a dozen, bargaining demands starting
in
March.
Suppose there hadn't been a bargaining demand prior to July 15th.
That would present a much more difficult case. Although I think that really, if you look at like the,
doesn't that kind of make his point?
No, it, only in a sort of metaphysical sense, I think, or a Pickwickian sense would this make it.
Okay. We like metaphysics.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
And I think the best illustration is the Seventh Circuit's decision in York. In that case, bankruptcy trustee was running the business with no notice, no opportunity for bargaining. The trustee shut down the plant. 3 days after the shutdown and after everybody was discharged from the unit, the union requested bargaining for the first time after the unit was already basically obliterated. The court excused the failure to give prior notice, but most certainly held the employer to its duty to bargain over the effects of the decision to shut down that operation. I think really two essential.
That's not the usual fact pattern in the closing situation, though, right?
No, because generally, although it's excused in certain circumstances, generally pre-implementation notice is required. There was, in effect, pre-implementation notice here, I'd say in February when there was a general announcement.
You got me confused. After July 15th, according to the board, there was no longer an appropriate unit, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so if the first request for bargaining came in August, then at the time of that request, there was no appropriate unit to bargain on behalf of.
But an appropriate unit had existed, and all the prerequisites for bargaining had existed earlier. If the law were that all you need to do is implement this in a hurry, then I think the effects bargaining obligation, which is a bit of a, in a sense, a bit of a rump obligation as it is, would really amount to nothing. If all an employer needed to do was to delay announcement or delay implementation until it's a fait accompli.
I see.
Well, that raises a question for me. If Walmart were to prevail on this issue and were not to affect the plant closing cases, they suggest that the facts here are very unusual. I'm trying to figure out what would be the ramifications from the board's perspective in terms of a ruling for Walmart on that issue?
A ruling Walmart on that, I'm not sure how you could save out, if one were to hold for Walmart, save out the plant closing situations.
Put the plant closing to aside, and what else would be the ramifications from the board's
perspective? I think the ramifications really would be that the effects bargaining obligation would be really rather illusory, since it would be at the whim of basically factors that are completely within the employer's control to basically manipulate if it's simply a question of timing.
Well, let me go back to that, because I do. Mr. Wheelis's argument in part was that, you know, plant closings are different. But one of the things that he said is there you have an established bargaining relationship and here you do not. And I am curious about that, because it seems to me that in the normal plant closing context, you would have had a collective bargaining and perhaps already an agreement before this happened. Whereas in this case, you never have a contract. You never actually have an established collective bargaining agreement. And yet the board says we can still impose this requirement of effects bargaining.
Well, the absence of a pre-existing relationship is, in one sense, a product of Walmart's basic refusal to bargain from the outset. There's certainly nothing in the case law that suggests that a pre-existing bargaining relationship is a prerequisite to effects bargaining. I acknowledge freely that I think it's very difficult to find plant closing cases, which are the closest analogy we have, that involve a situation where the union is newly arrived on the scene. But it is not unusual, as with the Frito-Lay and earlier Walmart cases show, it's not unusual for an employer to make fundamental changes to its business or the way it operates or the way its employees do their work in the midst of a representation case. And to deprive those employees of the representation that they basically earned through the board's processes simply because it took the board until August to get around to certifying the union, which is not contrary to Walmart's presentation as sort of a talismanic event, would really be to strip the last the last and only benefits of unionization that were earned here. And on the subject of certification, as Judge Tatel correctly pointed out, the certification is simply the government putting its imprimatur on and rejecting objections. The relation back principle is not a legal fiction. It's a legal rule and a legal reality born of the fact that it can take a while for the board to issue the certification. And the act favors the commencement of collective bargaining as soon as possible. So any employer who makes unilateral changes in the interim or refuses to recognize and bargain with the union absolutely acts at its peril if the election is held valid.
But not if the unit has been declared inappropriate before the time of certification.
Well, not if the.
I think that's the key. That's kind of the key unusual fact, right? Isn't this unusual?
It's certainly unusual procedural setting, but Walmart's position is essentially that the change rendered the unit inappropriate ab initio, and that's simply not the case. There was a window of time, albeit brief.
Usually the kind of changes you're talking about and acting at your peril and all of that doesn't render the unit inappropriate necessarily.
Right, not necessarily. And there are really only a handful of reported cases sort of dealing with this situation. But as I think the Frito-Lay case and again their earlier Walmart case make clear, unless the change somehow occurred, or there's newly discovered evidence that the certification was inappropriate, the unit was inappropriate ab initio, there's still a window of opportunity here for bargaining and a window during which the board is fully entitled to require bargaining over effects.
Can I go back to the July 15th issue? Is your answer to, so your point isn't that the August letter relates sort of that the August letter, you don't embrace the point I made, which is that this August letter somehow is just one in a continuing requests for bargaining, several of which predated July 15th. Your point is that even if the union had not requested bargaining at all before July 15th, it was okay to request bargaining after July 15th about the effects of the change, correct?
Well,
Even though as of July 15th, the unit was inappropriate?
I think that's correct under York, which I find
under what?
York, the seventh York versus NLRB, Seventh Circuit decision. But in this case, in these circumstances, there was a long series of bargaining demands, and as you correctly pointed out, the one alleged in the complaint, August 21, by its terms, refers back to this to this series of bargaining demands.
Is that the board's view or just mine?
Well, it's at a minimum shared by board counsel.
Well, had you had that idea before I mentioned it?
I certainly had. And the facts are the facts, and the history of a half a dozen bargaining demands, all of them geared toward the effects bargaining obligation.
Why,
as
why
the
would
LJ
the general
found.
Counsel have only mentioned the August demand? Did you know?
I don't. I'm not privy to the thinking.
No, but you know how the
thinking.
Board works. Why yeah. would they have done that? Why would the
my best speculation, which is perilous,
okay.
is that there seems to have been an advertent decision. A considered decision by the general counsel to avoid any allegation that the conversion itself
right.
was unlawful,
but
or the conversion without bargaining over the decision itself was unlawful.
Guessing about that is not perilous. That's pretty clear from the record.
So having done that, I think.
Why didn't he mention or she mention the March 13th demand to bargain?
My guess would be that the framer of the complaint sought to, albeit perhaps unsuccessfully, minimize confusion over what is actually being alleged by saying, as of this date, they Walmart failed and refused to bargain over the effects of their decision, probably confident in the both in the facts and confident that it would be clear that an effects bargaining obligation, like any bargaining obligation, once it takes hold, it's a continuing obligation until it's discharged by either reaching a lawful impasse or reaching an agreement. And in addition, I think that it is not, emphasize again at the risk of trying the court's patience, that I don't think that every predicate fact needs to be alleged in a complaint, particularly in a case that's, where the facts are quite clear and quite undisputed as to the history.
Now your point is, look, the general counsel's complaint clearly alleges refusal to bargain in response to a demand.
Correct.
And that's all they need to do.
Correct.
Okay.
Can you address Mr. Wozinski's point that this is unprecedented, essentially, I think, if I'm accurately capturing his point, to do this kind of, for this kind of decision?
Well, I think that Mr. Wozinski's point is that there are no precedents on the books in which a meat department is held to be inappropriate merely because it handles only case-ready meat. I would suggest that it is more than implicit in the whole sort of history of the sort of sub-doctrine of appropriate units that's developed in this industrial setting. Historically, supermarket meat departments went from handling whole carcass meat, which required the use of full panoply of meat cutting skills, to boxed meat, which cut down the amount of skills that were needed. But because some skilled meat cutting might be required in certain circumstances, the board said, we're not going to presume that a separate unit is appropriate, but we will look at the facts and circumstances. But by the time you get to this point of technological or commodity chain sort of development at which nothing, no meat cutting is any longer required of supermarket meat departments, really the rationale for setting them apart from other sales associates. It's quite clear that Walmart radically de-skilled these jobs that is a significant change in terms and conditions of employment. And it's not just a significant change, but it's a significant change to the key factor that supported the unit determination in the first instance. Unless there are any further questions.
Okay, thank you. So how much time did Mr. Wyszynski have? Okay, well, go ahead, you can take your minute. And would you start by using some of it to respond to this, to the point Mr. Willis made about the general counsel's complaint contains no allegations of requests for bargaining prior to July 15th?
Let me address in two different ways, Your Honor. I mean, the union did submit, it's in the record, and the company during the hearing stipulated in the evidence, they knew what we were litigating at the hearing, I was there, that we were litigating all of the demands to bargain stemming from, I think, a couple weeks after the Palestine hearing, and there were several throughout. Number one. Number two,
So your point is they never argued before the board that the March 13th request was beyond the scope of the general counsel's complaint?
I don't know if they argued to the board. I don't know whether or not they argued to the board. They sure as heck at the hearing didn't say, look, these earlier demands to bargain and Walmart's refusal to bargain, that those were irrelevant because the only thing that's its issue here is the bargaining demand that the union made in August. I know they didn't say that. To the contrary, they stipulated those into evidence. Mm-hmm. And to answer your question, I do know why the board asked us to send another bargaining demand after certification. I went to the regional office of the board and I said, we've made our request to bargain over the effects, over the decision at that time, over the effects, and to bargain a contract. And I thought it was clear. The board, to make things clear, this is the way they were explaining it to me, wanted us to make one final demand and then file the unfair labor practice charge when Walmart denied it and then issue their complaint.
Well, go ahead. I used up your minute. Go ahead. Now your minute starts.
Thank you, Your Honor. I just wanted to go back to your point, Judge Tatel, that there was a significant change in the meat department. And what's important, I think, is to remember that the board relies in its decision, in this case, on the findings of the ALJ. And the ALJ, at Appendix 22, found that the change to case-ready meat didn't require any employee to lose his job or transfer out of the department or get a pay decrease or suffer reduction in hours, that there I'm just trying to, let's see. And that in the end, that here, this is what the judge is saying, Walmart here simply changed how it conducts the same business in the same area with the same employees who worked in the unit when the board certified the unit. So while I respect your observation that, you know, there was a significant change because they were no longer performing skilled work in the meat department after Case Ready was implemented, I would submit to you that that's actually not the findings that the board found. To the contrary, the board found that things were just the same, but nevertheless, the unit was inappropriate.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Willis?
Thank you, Your Honor. In the general counsel's remarks, he once again emphasizes and acknowledges that the general counsel is relying solely and only on pre-July 15th conduct and alleged or unalleged violations to
conduct which he says was fully litigated. Walmart never complained about it.
Exactly, Your Honor. Exactly. And Walmart didn't complain about it because it didn't know that there was any such allegation. And both general counsel and
during the hearing, Walmart didn't know that one of the issues was Walmart's refusal to respond to the March 13th request to bargain?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. And there is no record here to say otherwise. And both counsel for the general counsel and the UFCW counsel talk willy-nilly about what happened in the hearing, but there's no record here. There's no record before this court to suggest that that issue was litigated. We know for a fact from the record that it wasn't alleged, and we know based upon the general counsel's briefs and his comments here at oral argument that and his statement here was that the situation here is a product of Walmart's refusal to bargain from the outset. Their whole theory is predicated on a allegation that on March 13th there was a demand, and on March 14th there was a refusal to bargain. That is their whole theory of their case, but it's not alleged, and it wasn't tried, and Walmart didn't raise it because it didn't know that that was going to be the basis for this post hoc rationalization. What we know is if you look at the board's decision and its motion denying Walmart's request for reconsideration, all the board referred to was the plant closing case analogies, which is what the ALJ relied on. And the plant closing cases don't apply here because they start from a completely different point. And I'd like to just address Judge Kavanaugh's point about the effect, and I suppose that's a pun intended, of the board's this court denying enforcement to the board's order. And the general counsel's response to that was, well, it would make the effects bargaining obligation illusory because these factors are solely within the control of the employer and subject to manipulation. That's simply not right, because the board has the National Labor Relations Act has a provision called Section 8A3, which states that you can't discriminate against employees in the terms and conditions of their employment based upon their union status. If there was any sort of manipulation, if an employer manipulated the system in order to avoid an effects bargaining obligation, then there would be an 8A3 violation. The board here spent over a year, general counsel's advice division spent over a year looking into Walmart's planning for the case ready meat program, its implementation, its studies, the whole 10 yards, and said to the union who filed a charge, an 8A3 charge, there's no unlawful act here. This was a lawful business-based decision. And so the idea that a ruling against the board here is going to open the floodgates to bad employers is simply not supported. And finally, I just say that the York case, again, is a plant closing case, had nothing to do with an inappropriate unit.
Thank you. The case is submitted.
Thank you, Your Honor.